Hey everyone, this is Michael Ellsberg, and welcome to the inaugural episode of The Michael Ellsberg Show, my podcast, which is going to feature a mix of me interviewing lots of awesome, interesting people that I know and connect with, and also it's going to have recordings of my lectures at various places, which you can download and listen to on your digital device. So today's inaugural episode is going to be me interviewing an interesting person, a dear friend of mine, Daniel Pinchbeck, who in many ways is the contemporary incarnation of Timothy Leary, our generation's main voice for psychedelic exploration and understanding. He is the author of Breaking Open the Head and 2012, and he's joining me live in my home office in Brooklyn. And we are having a friendly Friday afternoon conversation about ayahuasca. And I just shared with Daniel my thought that ayahuasca is, in a sense, a meme that is spreading through certain trendy segments of the entrepreneurial, young, future business owners of America. Not so much the old, you know, 50, 60-year-old people who already own most of the wealth in the country, though some of them are experimenting it with it, but certainly the people who are going to own a lot of the wealth in the country, the young entrepreneurs who are starting businesses now, are starting to experiment, and it's getting actually quite trendy for certain segments in New York and the Bay Area and L.A., to have experimented with this psychedelic hallucinogenic brew. And my thought is that this is, in a sense, a meme that is spreading. And if you study the concept of a meme, people who write about it talk about it like it's almost like a piece of genetic information, but instead of getting spread through sexual reproduction, as in most of biological genetic spreading of information, it gets spread through cultural reproduction. And the theory is that in some ways memes take over the software of a person's mind and then turn that person into the servant of the meme. So for example, any religion, be it Christianity or Judaism or any or Islam or any religion, is in a sense a meme that has taken over the software in the believer's mind and turned their hardware, their bodies, their lives, into propagation tools to be evangelists and missionaries for spreading that little piece of information or those combinations of pieces of information. And my theory is that perhaps ayahuasca is the meme of the earth, because people who take it tend to become proselytizers for it, and tend to become proselytizers for ideas like getting more in touch with shamanistic knowledge, getting more in touch with traditional knowledge, respecting the earth. It tends to have that effect on the people who take it. Not everyone, but it's a very strong tendency. So in a way, the earth, which is in critical condition right now, has created its own meme-spreading tool to spread awareness about the need to rebalance our relationship with Earth, and that tool has come through the form of ayahuasca. Daniel, do you have any thoughts on all these ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I really like a concept from this guy, Tom Roberts, who has a new book coming out called The Psychedelic Future of the Mind. And one of his ideas is that the kind of rediscovery of psychedelics in the last 50 years is something like a second reformation. So you had, with the first Reformation, before that, like, the priests knew the word of God and held that secret because most people weren't literate or certainly didn't speak Latin. Then with the Reformation, the Bible became everybody's, you know, available to everybody, so everybody could at least read the word of God for themselves and read about all the visions that people had had in the past. So with the second Reformation, now people are able to have those visions for themselves. So he sees that as like a profound shift in our religious culture and our future orientation.
Wow. Now, one question I have is, if we're talking about ayahuasca as being something that could profoundly upset and change the current power dynamics in the world that place humanity far above nature, if it could be something that actually rebalances that and gets large numbers of humans, or at least well-placed influential humans, who seem to be the people who are experimenting with this experience. It has the potential to do that. Do you think, though, that it could be co-opted in a sense, or neutralized, the way, in some sense, yoga has been commercialized? So if you look at the foundations of yogic philosophy, it's a profoundly anti-materialist, anti-consumerist philosophy that if people actually paid attention to, it would probably have them be less materialistic. And yet, if you see the way it's developed in America, you know, there's no place more materialistic than a yoga conference, if you've ever attended one. I mean, it's like, who's got the better yoga mat? Who's got the more expensive yoga pants? Who's going to the fancier retreat in Tulum? You know, all these kind of things. So in a way, it's been just totally co-opted to fit into American consumerism. Do you think that ayahuasca could just go down that path?
Well, I have a lot to say on that subject. I mean, the first thing I would say is that yoga and Hindu philosophy are very different from the indigenous and shamanic traditions, and that in a weird way, even though they're non-dualistic in a sense, that they have a kind of a concept of detachment from the natural and the physical world. They're still kind of like sky religions, like you're meant to transcend the body, and so actually, you can have like a yoga or a Hindu vibe that is, in a strange way, materialistic. It's not a contradiction for them. And you see like Osho, who came here in the 70s, who had 100 Rolls Royces, where it's kind of like just the play of the material realm, like playing with the Maya. With the indigenous traditions, there's no separation. Like they see the natural and the supernatural, or the psychic and the physical, as one, you know, kind of weave together. And so one of the profound benefits of ayahuasca is it gives us like a direct ontological experience of that indigenous cosmology and that indigenous understanding. And so I don't think it can be co-opted as yoga has been in a certain sense. And in fact, I love to see the way it's spreading. And ayahuasca itself grows quickly. It's a vine. And, you know, when I wrote my first book, Breaking Open the Head, in 2002, and I would speak about it, like hardly anybody had heard of it when I gave talks. And now everybody has heard of it. And I'm seeing this vine spread, you know, its tendrils through all these different subsets of our society, whether it's like hip-hop artists or financiers from the major like banking families or whatever. So I really have a feeling that it has a almost like a purpose or a destiny in terms of how we evolve consciousness and move into the next phase. And then we can also see, looking back to the 60s, like how profoundly impactful LSD and mushrooms were in terms of the people who discovered the personal computer and the internet, or Carrie Mullis, who discovered polymer chain reactions and won the Nobel Prize. You know, so I think that the kind of integration of the psychedelic experience is an ongoing process in modern Western culture, and it's something that is going to have many more implications, and I think many more awesome and benevolent ones in the next years.
Let's talk a little bit about the difference between ayahuasca and other psychedelics that have been around on the American scene longer than the current kind of ayahuasca renaissance or boom. MDMA, ecstasy, marijuana, LSD, mushrooms, all of these have the potential to be very life-transforming experiences for the people who take them, but they also, as we know, have the potential to be massively abused, taken in very casual or superficial ways, just turned into a kind of party drug that doesn't seem to change the person's consciousness very much, or just turns them into like a partier. It's very hard for anyone who's tried ayahuasca to imagine it being used widely as a recreational drug, it being abused in that way. It's certainly not a party drug. The truth is it's potentially an incredibly challenging experience physically and emotionally. It's very likely that you're going to spend a lot of your time vomiting while you do it. You can have terrifying, terrifying visions. No one does it, at least no one wise, does it for fun. What do you see as the difference between that medicine and the the types of drugs that have turned into potentially just party drugs for large parts of the population.
Okay, well, I mean, I would be careful not to cast too much aspersion on the, is that the right word, on those other substances?
Oh, and I don't. I'm just saying it's clear that they have the potential to be used in very superficial or disrespectful ways, just as they have the potential to be used in very profound ways.
I mean, I actually feel right now we are going through a second phase of the kind of psychedelic renaissance that began in the 60s. It's like a new wave, I mean, in terms of all the young artists and, as you mentioned, entrepreneurs, like everybody who's exploring this with a lot more intent and a great gain of knowledge, you know, from the last 40 years of study and thought around it. So, yeah, but particularly with ayahuasca, it's as you said, it knocks you down. It can't be used recreationally, so that makes a distinction. It really forces you to kind of strengthen your spirit. I work with a friend of mine who has a great connection to tribes in Ecuador, and we talk about how, if you drink ayahuasca, you drink the first cup, you're sick, you know, then you're really like, how much do I want that knowledge? You know, how much do I want the next level of insight or the next level of realization? You know, am I willing to like crawl up, even though I'm like sick as a dog, and just get that second cup, and then that third cup, you know? So it's almost like there's a war between your spirit and your body. Your body just wants to relax into comfort, but your spirit wants to know and explore and intensify. You know, so in that way, the experience of working with ayahuasca is itself kind of initiatory, as the more you get into it, if it's something that you find that you love, you know, it's not necessarily for everybody, you know, you're almost forced to strengthen your will and your spirit to go deeper into it.
My sense is that the ayahuasca experience is potentially incredibly life-changing, powerful experience for anyone who wants to, as you put it, you know, put in that work and really go through some amount of ordeal to get self-knowledge. But it has to be done with expert guidance. It's not something you can just figure out on your own. It's a profoundly powerful substance that that you need a guide into. And the problem is that I've seen is that there are now a lot of people turning this into a business, the guiding of this medicine. And so we've just seen, if you followed the news at all, recently the case of a young man who went down to Peru and was under the guidance of a shaman who turned out to be somewhat of a huckster, let the kid go around the jungle while he was on the medicine, which is a really bad idea, in my opinion. The kid died somehow, probably not from overdosing, because you can't really overdose on the medicine, but you know, he could have just fallen off a rock or something being in that state. And then the guy tried to bury him and then denied to police that he was buried. So this is clearly an unethical shaman, kind of huckster guy that's selling these experiences. Once especially in the third world, these poor populations see that there's a Western demand for this experience. Is there a danger of large amounts of unqualified hucksters coming in and just offering this almost like a Disneyland carnival ride in very unsafe ways?
Yeah, there's some danger of that. I mean, obviously the story you described is a very, very tragic story. I mean, my personal perspective is that we have to see that this is like, you know, a transitional phase in the modern world's kind of understanding and integration of these other traditions. And in a transitional phase, you know, there's going to be mistakes, there's going to be chaos, you know, and there are dangers in doing this medicine. As you said, it's not physically dangerous as far as we know, but, you know, there are all sorts of dangers to it. And also, we have to get over our naivete a little bit, because, you know, we discover ayahuasca, it has benefits for us, and then we're like, oh, wow, it's always good, it's always benevolent. But in the Amazon, for instance, in Peru, you know, the tradition is it can be used for shamanism or sorcery. Like, people can use it to increase their personal power and their hold over other people and so on. I mean, we don't even necessarily understand that kind of stuff yet, you know, how that works. So like anything that's really profound and complicated, it's going to take us a while to reckon with it. And the best thing in this intermediate stage is that people really, really develop discernment. You know, so if you want to have such an experience, make sure you check references. Like, what do people who've had the experience say about it? How has it impacted them? You know, do they seem better for it? Do they seem like it somehow, you know, knock them further into a hole or something? So, you know, and because the legality around these areas is also still questionable, that's a very complex issue with ayahuasca right now, because there's been certain, like the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Santo Daime a number of years ago, which is a religion from Brazil that uses ayahuasca as a sacrament. And that was for Uno de Vegetalis, sorry. And then the Santo Daime, another religion from Brazil, just won a federal case in Oregon, I believe. So the legality around the whole thing is gray and changing quickly. But yeah, so, you know, it's just, this is an area where there really isn't any final arbiter at this point. There's no academy around it. There's no institutional structure. So it requires care and discernment from the individual. And that's just the way it's going to be right now.
Let's go back to the concept I opened this with, where if you think about thought structures that have spread throughout the last several thousand years, almost all of them have been anti-nature. Most of the different thought structures, from monotheistic religions to the Enlightenment and the Scientific Revolution, have had some attitude where man is in control, we control nature, everything is here for our benefit, we get to decide how it gets used. And there's been little pockets of ideological resistance to that among, say, the Green Movement, which started in the 60s and 70s. But, you know, the Green Movement has not spread very much. In superficial ways, it has. You know, now there's people who want green makeup and, you know, green coffee mugs and these kind of things. But as a deep philosophical movement, it is a very limited thing, and always has been. Is it possible that this experience, which kind of piggybacks on the natural desire for large amounts of people have to experience altered consciousness, is it possible that this is maybe the first really spreadable meme or vehicle for spreading Earth consciousness?
Yeah, it's quite a question. I think we're certainly, if you look at all of the scientific data and evidence and read books like Bill McKibben's recent book, Earth, or Mark Linus's book, The God Species, you know, we're definitely hitting the limits of the planet's resources and carrying capacity in a large number of areas. And we are going to have to reckon with the impact of industrial society on the planet, or we're just not going to make it as a species in all likelihood. So that can be, I mean, and certainly, you know, in cities like New York, you know, it's astonishing how little people talk and think about that for the most part. You know, you can go out night after night and there's very, very, you know, nobody wants to go there or consider that. You know, a lot of these indigenous prophecies that I wrote about in 2012, I think are very related to this, that like humanity has to come into a reckoning where we realize that we are part of nature. As Barbara Marx Hubbard, you know, talks about, we have to recognize that, you know, we are kind of the evolving stem, you know, of the planetary ecology. And, you know, we have an opportunity to move into a different relationship. She talks about the idea of conscious evolution, you know. But to get to that stage, we will have to reconsider the way we're using technology, reconsider the way we're organizing society, and make a profound shift. So I definitely think that ayahuasca could be a very crucial tool for that. And especially, it's especially exciting that it does seem to be reaching a lot of like the most incredible people in our culture. And, you know, my hope and prayer would be that that influence grows and continues.
Yeah, that's the part that seems very different right now, is that there's large numbers of young, dynamic, influential people who are entrepreneurs, who are connected to power structures in America, who are connected to wealth, who are having very profound transformational experiences through the medicine. And I haven't seen anything quite like that yet. With all due respect, again, for the other medicines that have you know, come since the 60s, there's something very unique about ayahuasca, and then it tends to completely turn someone's life upside down. There's very little chance of going into that experience with a lot of bullshit and coming out with the same bullshit. It's kind of like a bullshit stripper that takes away a lot of the ego, a lot of the just bullshit interpersonally and ego that people go into. And if large numbers of influential people are having that experience, that actually seems hopeful to me, because it does tend to create a service mentality in those who do the work, where you're so grateful for having had this medicine that you want to spread healing and change and medicine to other people. Why do you think that this experience, which in some ways is much less accessible than the other drugs that are out there, because it's so much more difficult to have the experience, why do you think it's starting to spread right now among kind of influential young people?
I mean, you know, there's a quality of mystery there, which is just kind of beautiful to acknowledge and celebrate. In some cases, I've seen friends who are, you know, in 30s, 40s, who are super successful, like Italian playboys or, you know, hedonistic millionaires with family fortunes, who have kind of exhausted all of the potentials of a kind of narcissistic, hedonistic lifestyle. You know, they've had all the women, and they've taken all the coke, and they've gone to every art fair, and they're still, like, their cells are screaming, like, this is just not interesting anymore for me. You know, and then I'm seeing them almost be magnetically compelled by this experience, you know, which goes against everything they believe. Like, they, you know, at first they'll complain for months about the vomiting and the nausea, and they don't want to do it again, but they're dragged back into it. It's like something is calling, you know, from this direction that has a numinous and mysterious quality. And I think it's just an aspect of this evolution of consciousness that's taking place on the planet. Yeah, it's just something that we can't fully explain with our rational minds, but we feel the necessity of it, you know?
If someone wants to explore that experience further, obviously we can't recommend doing it in the United States. It's not legal in the United States. It actually is legal in Peru and some other Latin American countries. What do you recommend in terms of someone finding how they can have access to this experience?
Right. As you mentioned, in Peru and Colombia, the experience is clearly legal. In some other Central and South American countries, it's muddily or murkily legal. So, you know, once again, it's a question of research. I mean, I don't think it's right for me to just recommend a few places off the top of my head. If people are interested, they could email me and I'll think about it for them, daniel@evolver.net. And just, you know, I think the main thing is, at this point, so many people have gone down there and had this experience, is to network and talk to those people and hear about, like, where they had the most incredible time, you know?
I personally have met one particular healer in Pisac, Peru, called Javier, and he has a website, ayaruna.com, ayaruna.com, and he's someone you might want to check out. Again, you have to do your own due diligence. You have to figure out if something's right for you. I'm certainly not going to blanket recommend that anyone should or shouldn't try it, but if you're curious, there's places you can research and find the right place for you to go in one of these countries where it is legal and where there's a tradition of shamanism, where you can be guided in a safe way by a reputable guide. Daniel, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Michael.
If you want to find out more about Daniel's work, his main home on the internet is his Facebook profile, which you can subscribe to, and that is Daniel Pinchbeck, P-I-N-C-H-B-E-C-K, on Facebook. And you can check me out, Michael Ellsberg, on Facebook, and also at my website, ellsberg.com, E-L-L-S-B-E-R-G.com.